Petra's humor cooled. She set down her utensil, fingers braced on the curve of the composite. She could etch it with lightning, but not much else. It wouldn't hold a charge or define a path through which intelligent circuitry could flow. "Remember when Hurrem Kane paid me a visit?" she asked. All humor vanished from Nash's expression.
"Don't," he whispered.
"Remember?" Petra said, voice low to keep from breaking. "When I came home to a habitat rupture? Remember how I could smell the sulfur coming in from outside? They set off a blast inside our home, Nash. The lights were out. I could hear the air ingress. I couldn't find Elaine. I didn't know if she was lying dead in a corner. You wouldn't remember that, would you? Because you had run." Nash was staring down at the floor, jaw stiff, expression hard.
"I didn't ever think anyone would come after you," he said.
"You didn't ever think," Petra corrected. "You want to reminisce about the times when I liked you? You know exactly what happened. You made your choices. You sold us out. And when it all went up in sparks, you vanished back to the ship. All that's on you, Nash. It's still on you. You think you can cook me dinner and all's forgiven?"
"I made mistakes," Nash said. "And people got hurt because of them. I know I'm not going to make that right. But I figured I could at least start making it up to you.
Start," he added quickly, as Petra found a retort at the tip of her tongue.
"Doing something good in your life, at least."
Petra stared at him.
"You look like you haven't eaten since I left," he said.
Petra blinked. She hadn't considered how she'd look to someone who hadn't seen her in so long. Why would it matter anyway? She knew she'd taken to running off the tension. Knew she felt harder and leaner than she had back in the good times. But seeing a fleck of maternalism in Nash stunned her for a moment. Then, like everything about Nash, it fed a bit more fuel into the slow-burning anger in her gut. "The food was very good," she said stiffly. She couldn't find a way to say, "I don't need your good works. I've survived this long without you caring. There's nothing you can do to change what happened, so why bother trying now?"
"Yeah," Nash said. "You know, I didn't do much cooking out in the ship. Harder to get food variety there. It's more of a holiday thing."
Plenty of things Petra could ask at that. What kind of holidays do you celebrate out there? Or, wasn't there a big push to get the ship's hydroponics up and running again? Time was, she'd been curious about life on the ship the way she'd been curious about life back on Earth. It was a foreign land, and one she'd never be visiting. Tales of strange customs were always passing amusements. Now the comet felt barbed. "I'm glad," she said, "you've found something to enjoy here." Nash bit back words, probably a curse, probably some invective.
"Please," he said, "can we just start over? Start from here?"
"You haven't been living here," went Petra's anger. "I'm here. I'm always here. Where the hell else would I be starting from?" Probably wasn't what he meant. Probably what he meant was, can't we pretend like we don't have a past? Or more likely, can't we just pretend like our only past's the good one? And maybe he could pretend that they could have a fresh start, but Petra couldn't imagine what the hell it would take to feel good about this. About Ahmad showing up and throwing Nash's life into her arms like it was her responsibility.
about Nash forcing a smile and bringing his guilt to lay at her feet like it was her job to forgive him. About him bringing up those times before all this, the food and the company and the easy companionship. Petra didn't get along with most people. Elaine and Nash had been notable exceptions. She'd pushed Elaine away herself, and Nash was Nash. "We are," she said, "exactly where we are." The question was, as it always was, where the hell to go from here? Sooner or later, something would break, one way or another. Petra knew this. She'd either wall off Nash completely, let him live his ghost of a life out beyond the periphery of her awareness, or she'd crack, let him in again, maybe find herself dragged along to forgiving him. This shambling mockery of their former friendship was too unstable not to decay. But just the thought of forgiving him made her feel duped and stupid, like she was falling again for the easy smile and the amiable interest. She knew that where they were now, what she was feeling, was miserable. Thing was, there was quite some distance between knowing that and knowing how to fix it. And she didn't have a way to say it. Never had been the best with words, except those words she had a chance to rehearse over and over, locked in her head for hours. Still, she might have found something to say if the colony hadn't shuddered as something in the sky exploded. Petra's head snapped up, even though she couldn't see a damn thing through the colony composite. But there was no time to feel shock or fear. An instant later, two more explosions shook the ground, presaged by a matter of moments by a wave of energy that rammed straight through her mind and tossed her in all directions at once. Petra's mouth was open, but sound wasn't coming out. Her body curled and spasmed outward, skin and muscle and bones striking smart mat, composite, desk, and floor and walls, mind tossed between them as though it didn't have a home in either one. Attack, part of her thought, but the rest of her was alight, drowning in lightning. Her mind was scrabbling through the whole of the colony, lit up like a nightmare. Smart mat there, growing into tumorous outcrops. Food receptacles there, searing their contents or expelling them. The insulation at the oxygen recyclers glowing their resistance. Nash here, reaching out to grab her, his voice insistent and concerned. And Petra threw out a hand and found his body and sent great gluts of energy cascading out of her. Through her body, straight from the screaming sky and the overloaded colony walls. And the body that was Nash flew away and out of her awareness again. And then awareness flew out of her awareness, caught and twisted on the overload, and she was nowhere. There was nothing. And then there was noise and senseless sense data and pain and noise. And then there was a tumult of energy she couldn't find her way out of. And then there was a tiny sliver of calm pressing its way into her awareness with the barrage of energy hammering around it. Petra reached for it, tried to focus in the wreckage of all her thoughts, and the calm pressed deeper into her until she came to the surface of cool air and nausea and a hand on her forehead. Petra tried not to whimper. At whatever sound did come out of her, the hand shifted, and a long, cool sensation wended down Petra's throat and into her stomach, settling it. "Love?" Elaine asked. Petra groped for her hand. Her body felt disconnected at the joints. All the muscles felt like water. Her coordination was shot. Elaine found her hand for her and pushed a sense of stability into her bones. "Come on," Elaine said, and got an arm around her shoulders. Come on, pet. Sit up. Ground. Vertiginous motion. The whole world went tilt-a-whirl, and Petra collapsed against Elaine, swinging her feet out of the infirmary cubby bed, pressing bare soles into the floor. Ground, Elaine said again. And Petra fumbled for the energy in her mind. Everything was out of whack. The walls were cacophonous. The storm outside was too much, too close. She took the energy in her body and the energy in the air and pushed it down into the channels beneath the floor of the habitat that would carry it to its repositories. She could feel them, distant and bright. New ones as well, likely put in place by the Sioux makers who wouldn't have been incapacitated as she was. All of her ached. The colony ached. The new channels stood out like lines of cold metal grafted into living flesh. Then she could feel Elaine's fingers on her temples, Elaine's presence trying to clear up the mess of her mind. Pet, Elaine said, if you can think, you need to deal with Nash. They're going to kill him. Rage tingled at Petra's fingertips. Elaine must have felt it, must have felt the balance of her body's energies shift, because she moved her hands, palms against Petra's cheeks, tilting her head so Petra's choices were to look at her or close her eyes. Petra, Elaine said, you almost killed him. Fuck, Petra breathed, and it sure as hell felt like the sky was falling in on her. She cast an arm out, seeing Elaine's shoulders, and Elaine got herself under it and pulled her up. All right? Elaine asked, and Petra made herself nod. Then they were off. Petra was stumbling, her weight on Elaine, back through the halls to the jurisdictor. There was a different Sudeig there this time. Her carapace paler, her stature taller. Some older generation, then. Petra's stomach roiled, and not all of it was vertigo. Sulai Tabov, the Sioux said, and gestured respect and consideration. Your health benefits the colony. You experience adequate recovery. I request Suva Elen's continued attention, Petra said. Beside her, Elaine made a perfunctory granting gesture, as eager to dispense with the pleasantries as Petra was to not deal with any of this. I also request aberrant Nash Carter's status. He is to be excised, the Sioux said. Has there been a confusion? Petra nearly laughed. From what she could tell, a collection tower had been blown up. Of course there had been a confusion. But that wasn't what the Sioux worker meant. He should not be excised. You yourself partially excised him, the Sioux observed. No wounded here. No, you hurt him, Petra. What were you thinking? She hadn't been thinking. Do you not wish this interpreted as your intention? Petra closed her eyes. Most of the Sioux didn't bother learning human expression. Humans could speak or gesture what they needed understood. His excision is not my intention. And yet, with knowledge of the effects of lightning energy on human physiology, you discharged a great deal through his body. Sulai Tabov, the Sioux said. Are you admitting violent actions not in accordance with your intention? That was the question. So far as Petra knew, the Sioux didn't understand self-control. They didn't understand that an emotional urge to do one thing could conflict with an intellectual desire to do another. If Petra wanted Nash hurting, the Sioux would understand it as wanting him dead. If they understood Petra hurting Nash and not wanting him dead, they would understand that as a dangerous aberration in Petra's own mind, a disease that, because it was violent, might warrant excision. The leftover energy twisted around her gut, and bile attempted the back of her throat, but Elaine drew herself up. "Sudake," she said, and the Sioux made a gesture of deep respect. "Sulai Petra is human. You are aware that human makers of the early generations can experience cognitive overload in high-energy environments? Interpret the situation in that light." The Sioux made a gesture of apology and turned to Petra again. "Sulai Tabov," she said, "was it your intention to excise the aberrant, or did you damage him as an indirect result of the destruction of the lightning tower?" "I damaged him because I was angry and in pain, and I resented the hell out of him and still do," Petra couldn't say. "The discharge which injured him was an indirect result of the attack on the tower. Please don't kill him. Please don't kill me." "Is it your intention that he return to your custody?" "Can you be trusted?" seemed to be the undercurrent of that, and Petra could have spit fire or bile there. Could she? Like maybe she should recuse herself for Nash's own safety, never mind that it was his people who'd done this to her. "That," she said, "is the intention, the option I have." The Sudag put up her foreclaws and gestured a series of commands into the jurisdictor module. "Then I release him into your custody," she said. "You are free to return him for excision at any time." "I am keenly aware of that fact," Petra said, and pushed on toward the cells. The moment they got to the cell and the membrane lensed open, Petra shoved away from Elaine's support. The Sioux didn't bother putting chairs or other furniture in their cells. Creature comforts were too human a concept. Comfort for the condemned, even more so. She let herself collapse to the ground in a messy tangle of limbs, tipped against the wall. "Is Ahmad part of this?" she hissed at Nash. Ahmad, whose friend had just faced excision. Ahmad, who'd had to beg someone in the Sioux power structure for his friend's life. Ahmad, who'd hated the Sioux for years and might take a chance at striking back at them if he could. Ahmad, who'd practically adopted Nash and who Nash would protect. Nash could be stupidly loyal from time to time. It was just that none of that loyalty had been directed toward Petra when it came down to it in the end. Nash raised his head, and there was actual terror in his eyes. There were lines under his jaw, spidering up his neck. Discoloration from an electrical burn. Petra drew back. A hand touched her shoulder, and Elaine settled down next to her. A warm, solid presence, twining the fingers of her own hand around Petra's. Petra took in a breath and tried not to feel how jealous she was of Elaine's steadiness, that ability to move past it all, to smile and forgive if it was the useful thing, the healthy thing to do. Petra's head was a lightning storm. In a way, it always had been, even when the atmosphere was quiet outside. There was pain on Nash's face as he gathered up his resolve to speak. After this, he might well believe that Petra planned on excising him the moment he got too far out of line. Between that and the injury she'd inflicted, even accidentally, it almost made Petra feel like they were on equal ground. "Do you really think the Sioux want what's best for us?" Nash asked. For some reason, she hadn't been expecting that. She didn't know what she had been expecting. Groveling apology, maybe, or some arrogant parroting of the party line. But Nash waved his hands to the soft cell walls, walls that were as eager as anything Sue to close in and dissolve him. Dissolve both of them, given a chance. The cell was much smaller this time. It had already begun to close in, Petra thought, when Elaine had come to wake her. They were far too close. "I think the Sioux created this colony," she said, "and they've been adapting it to human use. They provide for us as well as they know how to, and..."
"As well as they know,"
Nash pressed.
"But they have a different biology. They're from a different environment. They don't understand us.
And blowing up a lightning tower is supposed to help?" Nash gestured helplessly.
"I didn't know. It's not that I want. I can understand it, Petra, even if I don't agree. If we don't have the Sioux to rely on," he began.
"Then we could all be exiles," Petra said. "And most of us like it here." Then, before he could retort, she asked, "What the hell did you do, Nash? Why did the Sioux want your execution? Did you come in here to tear us all down?" Nash looked away.
"What the hell does it matter?" he asked. "The Sioux thought it was a crime. Isn't that all you care about?"
Petra shook off Elaine's hand and reached out and grabbed Nash by the throat. Nash's whole body went rigid, and an angry, twisting thrill wound through Petra's gut. This was a problem. This was something she'd have to think about, have to talk to Elaine about. But it felt good to feel that fear under her fingers, to know that on some fucking axis, at least, what she thought and felt mattered to Nash, in a way that it apparently hadn't back when it was just her trust and her friendship on the line and not the looming threat of excision.
"I could have been excised out in that other room," she said, running over the intake of breath from her side, over the screaming in her head that she was going too far or not far enough. "Because I wasn't trying to kill you when I almost killed you. Because if Elaine hadn't had the rank of a Sioux father, and if she didn't still care about both of us, and fuck if I know why she does, they would have stamped me out because I was this close to seizures because of what Ahmad's friends did. You think I'm above all this? I've got mine. I live and die by the same Sudam rules. Do you fucking live by any? Do you just dream of not living by any?"
She could feel Nash's heartbeat racing under her fingers, feel him swallow, feel him breathe. Might have meant something if she was Elaine. As it was just proof that he, like her, was a haphazard collection of blood and muscle and bone. Bodies didn't tell her much. Beside her, Elaine breathed.
"Oh, Pet."
Petra shuddered. Elaine's voice was soft, like she'd just realized something. But if Elaine didn't know Petra was a walking disaster by this point, she just hadn't been paying attention. And that'd be all right then. They could just blast all the illusions to pieces today. Elaine reached out, slowly, carefully, and put her hand on Petra's wrist, disentangling her fingers from Nash's throat, and then drawing her in, Petra's head under her chin. It wasn't until she had Elaine's arms around her that Petra realized just how badly she was shaking. She turned into Elaine's chest and screwed her eyes shut, because even if she couldn't stop Nash from seeing this, she could stop herself from seeing the look in his eyes. She didn't want to fall apart, sick and shaking and blasted half to hell, ready to pave the rest of the way with her own maker's hands.
She didn't want him to see that this was how twisted on hooks she got. Didn't want him to know that he'd won. Even if this had never been about winning for him. But for all the power she had over him, he had this over her. And wasn't that just something? She could feel, in the movement against the crown of her head, that Elaine had turned to look at Nash. She could feel a tilt of Elaine's head, and then Nash stood up, and his unsteady footsteps left the cell. Leaving us in it, Petra thought. And isn't that the story of all of us? There would have been a long silence, if not for the thrumming of blood and the hard drag of breath, and Elaine making soothing noises, soothing motions of hands and power and influence, and Petra leaned into it despite herself. "Come back to live with me," Elaine said in time. "You can make yourself an office in my quarters. You're not protecting me by staying away, Pat. You know that. And I don't want to see you on your own." A laugh echoed up from somewhere in Petra, but it was a largely hollow thing. "Clearly not alone anymore, am I?"
"No,"
Elaine said, but it didn't sound like agreement. "But you're more locked in your head than you've ever been. And Pet, I know what your head's like in the storms." Petra could have said, "The storms aren't the half of it." But Elaine being Elaine, she would know that. Elaine being Elaine, Petra thought she meant any storms, not just the ones in the atmosphere. Nash was a Sudam storm of his own. "I'm still here," she repeated. "Is that the only thing that matters?" "Why not?" Petra thought, and Elaine drew her hand back through Petra's hair. "Just which one of you did you want me to file the grievance over?" Elaine asked. "Trusting someone isn't a crime, Pet. And you can stop punishing yourself for it any time now. Maybe you could even try again." Petra laughed, though it wasn't much like laughter. "You and Nash both saw the best potentials in people," Elaine said. "The only difference is that Nash still does." "Do you even know why we're in here?" Petra asked. As far as she was concerned, there was more support for her point of view in the air than for Elaine's. Or Nash's, if that didn't go without saying. 4-part stubbornness and 3 parts enemy action," Elaine said. "Pet, I'll find a way through this," Petra said. It was easy to say if she didn't think about how much she was lying when she said it.
"I'm here for you," Elaine said.
Petra let out a breath and sagged closer to her.
"Elaine," she said, "it was always supposed to be the other way."
There came a time when Petra could stand again and take her leave. And she did, and she walked back to her quarters and went inside. And there was Nash, stripped to his trousers, a Sue biomat healing agent extruded from the wall and creeping across his skin. Petra hadn't thought to give him access to the medical stations, but apparently someone had. Elaine, maybe. Or Ahmad had come in and done whatever he could do to muck with the systems. But when Petra walked in the door, Nash pulled himself away, the biomat suctioning off his bare shoulders, and went to one knee, head bowed. He touched his forehead, drawing his hand down in a line toward the ground. Gestured abasement.
"I didn't," he said, "want any of this to happen."
Petra stood rigid, watching him.
There were still traces of discoloration on his skin. Dark trees standing out like lash marks where lightning had coursed through him, gathering around his neck under the Sioux collar. A disconnected part of her thought she should check his collar, make sure she hadn't flooded the thing, make sure some control was still in place. Nash kept his eyes down.
"I want to fucking fix this," he said. "But there isn't a way, is there? What do I do, Petra?"
Then, after a moment, not a long enough pause into which to speak, he said,
"Ahmad wants to steal me back from you."
Petra's hands curled. "Of course you've been in contact with him."
"Of course he's been in contact with me,"
Nash said.
"He cares. We both cared about you, believe it or not. But we told the wrong people the wrong things, and then everything went to hell so fast that saving our own skins was all we could do. Would it have helped you or Elaine for us to get thrown into excision chambers then?"
"Yes," part of her said, but it was the same part that would have watched Nash die in the first place, small and miserable. "I could have saved you then. Would have meant something then, that you faced what you did wrong."
"I never thanked you,"
Nash said. Petra's stomach turned.
"I showed up trying to spread separatist sentiment, and you didn't agree with me, but you made a space for me anyway,"
Nash said, and Petra's train of thought jolted. This wasn't about saving him from excision. It was about that time years ago when they'd worked and eaten and laughed together, when the word friend didn't have to stretch thin to cover them.
"Got me into resource allocation. You know, there actually were times where I thought I was doing some good."
"You were doing good," Petra said. "Doing good work is hard and slow. It's not flashy, bright results like blowing up a tower." Pain flickered under the muscles of Nash's face. Petra looked away. Good work was the slow, generation-by-generation change of Sioux attitudes. It was the vanished practice of culling human elders, the dwindling practice of culling dissidents. Though that probably didn't look dwindling to Nash. It was Petra, standing in the miasma of seasons-long headaches and knowing that the next generation of human makers would benefit from what the Sioux fathers had learned from her, that the next generation would call the lightning with more ease and less pain than she had. Good work meant enduring the things that weren't perfect, because the people who solved things by burning them to the ground weren't people Petra would trust to build good infrastructure. But that was Petra's thought on the matter. Ahmad had different ideas. The separatists, too. And as for Nash, well, who the hell knew where he stood but him?
"Maybe," Nash said. And Petra could hear the separatist sentiment lingering around his tone.
Words like unendurable, like insurmountable difficulties. One of Nash's great-great-grands had been an original colonist, excised for reasons Petra had never looked up. Ahmad's own parents had been excised. They'd been separatists of the violent strain. Petra had no such painful history. "Maybe it's easy for you to say," the old saw went. "Wait and see." Maybe, Petra thought. There just were no good options, but she'd stand by hers as the best of the imperfect ones.
"I was informing on you from the beginning," Nash said. "I didn't think of it that way. I guess Ahmad and the others did."
And she, like an idiot, had taken him in and showed him the gardens in First Cluster,
and introduced him to her wife and talked politics and plans for the future. How they must have drunk that up, back where Nash came from. They must have thanked him. How must that have felt? What did you do, Nash? The question was on the tip of her tongue, and really, she could make Nash answer. In the end, though, she didn't have to make him.
You know how they got me?
He asked.
I came back in. I was trying to get in with one of the younger human fathers, see if we could find some common ground. I guess I was spoiled by you. He pegged me pretty fast as a separatist and tossed me to the Sioux with prejudice. He never lodged a grievance over me, though. You know, you're the only person who ever has.
Petra's stomach stilled like a dead thing. I said that Elaine should have. It would have had more weight coming from her.
I was nothing, remember?
Nash snorted.
Wasn't a Sudeg anymore after I left allocation. Hurrem Nash Carter. A grievance from a maker had plenty of weight on its own.
He looked at her.
I told Ahmad that Elaine was learning how to make human fathers and makers in utero. Ahmad told someone else. That's why they decided to take her. Can you imagine what that would do for human independence? We wouldn't need the Sioux at all.
You made her a target, Petra said. Nash showed his palms.
If you hadn't listed that grievance, they'd never have handed me over to you.
Petra laughed, if that was what you wanted to call it. How convenient for you. It was an unusual sight to see Nash struggle with words. But there was a struggle between his throat and his jaw now, as though human articulators could not shape human words into their right sentiment. He gestured helplessness and abasement again.
What can I do?
Change the past, maybe, Petra thought. Convince the Sioux to take back the ship territories. Give them what they need to do that. Hurt all the rest of these friends of yours the way you hurt me. What makes you think I have an answer? Nash's shoulders slumped, just slightly.
Maybe I just look up to you, he said.
Then, literally, he did look up, met her eyes, held her gaze.
I'm going to keep trying, he said.
As long as I own you, Petra thought. Made it hard to trust his good intentions, even when some small, traitorous part of her was tempted to. I'm going to go lie down, Petra said, and turned away from him. Petra made it back through her quarters to her sleeping cubby and collapsed into bed, staring up at the curving ceiling. She could feel an active bank of lightning clouds moving in. Energy for the colony, noise and pain for her. Not too long and they'd be right over her, and she'd be lucky to keep stringing thoughts together. Not that her thoughts were proving so helpful to her now. She raised her hand and caught the faint lines of energy that pervaded the colony, and she almost tweaked them. Almost gestured a calm channel into being, but stopped herself. That was interesting. She hadn't come this close to calling in a long time. What do I do, Elaine? Her fingers held there, on the edge of completing the gesture, opening the calm line, seeing Elaine's face projected in the dark. There'd been a time when she could have just rolled over, pressed her face into the curve of Elaine's neck at the shoulder, said wordlessly that which she didn't have words for. And Elaine would wrap around her, human warmth and human softness, and make the noise in her head go away. Lightning or no lightning. It was a skill Petra had never developed in herself.
What do I do, Elaine? Storms. What do I do?
A pressure was creeping up between her shoulder blades. It mirrored above her the crashing power of an unstable atmosphere, of some cataclysmic ecological mistake. The kind of thing that made anything she or Nash or Elaine or Ahmad could do pale by comparison. They hadn't managed to bring down an entire world. Just felt like it sometimes. Her hand curled around the air. Even from here, with great effort, she could punch a spire of smart matter into the sky like she could cut it apart. With that cloud formation rolling in, the energy would be replenished as fast as she could deplete it. The Sioux would question it, but probably not excise her for it, and it would be just as pointless and futile as most of her other options. Feel good, though, that energy coursing through her. Proof that she could make a mark, even if in the end it didn't matter. She moved her hand, changed her gesture. Contact addresses scrolled through her awareness. An array of human and Sioux connections she wouldn't let herself reach out for. After three loops through, she settled on the old address for Ahmad. A contact that she hadn't erased, despite every reason to do so. The address had been dead at Elaine's kidnapping and was probably still dead now. But the data pings, heading off into nowhere, occupied part of her awareness. With all the various storms, any distraction was welcome. Anyway, calling out into nothingness fit her mood. She could sense the change in the data, the signals routing out, and watch them, waiting until they were dissolved in her awareness by the lightning strikes. Then the nothingness answered. The screen fitzed into existence in front of her, the pale white of ship lighting casting most of the picture as edges and impressions. What wasn't faint and poorly defined, though, was the face of the man who'd answered the comm.
"The hell?" Petra said.
Ahmad looked just as confused as she was.
"You're the one who called me. The hell are you still responding on this address?" Petra asked, scrambling up to sit and face the screen. And it might have been her imagination, but she thought Ahmad flushed.
Look, a colony data address is useful, okay? Why are you calling if you thought the address was dead?"
"Diagnostics," Petra said.
Ahmad stared at her for a moment.
"You," he said, "are a crap liar."
"We can't all be good at it," Petra growled.
Ahmad made a series of gestures that Petra couldn't interpret. She shook her head and squinted at the screen. Some kind of human gesture, she thought. There were physical, non-verbal languages in human history, and ship people sometimes pulled those things out as counterculture. Whatever he was saying, Petra got the feeling it wasn't complimentary.
"Right. So you found my little not-so-secret data address," Ahmad said, his voice still coming through flustered. Why the hell he felt flustered was an open question.
If the emotion had anything to do with why he'd kept a data address he'd only set up at Petra's insistence in the first place, Petra didn't want to examine the situation too closely.
"Should we both go into another room and pretend this was a wrong gesture that never happened?"
Petra's head was pounding. It sounded like an appealing option. Except then, Ahmad would get in contact with Nash again, try to smuggle him back out to the edge of the colony and get the collar off, and this would probably come up. In a what-the-hell-is-Petra-playing-at way, or an is-Petra-investigating-us way, or a is-something-wrong-with-her way, and Petra's mind flashed to Nash, kneeling on the floor, hand moving from his forehead to the ground. What the hell were any of them supposed to do? She let out a breath and collapsed back to the bed. Energy was itching at her fingertips, ready for the shaping.
Do something, it seemed to say. We need to talk, she said.